You broke me, I laugh.
Not yet,
he mutters under his breath. But I hear it. I hear it, and suddenly I'm filled with fresh desperation to be touched by him.
Roll your ankle. Stretch your heel.
I bring my knee to my chest and do as I'm told. I know what view he's getting now when I'm in this position. My running shorts ride up and he can see my panties. White cotton. Feels much better. Thank you.
A massage for those short muscles,
he offers, his voice comically thick now.
We still have 20 minutes before school starts.
Sure. This time, he gathers my heels together, pulling my knees as far apart as he can. I'm wide open in front of him as his fingers start traveling my inner thighs. It's a brutal stretch, but I need it. Even so, I know he is not supposed to touch me that way at all and that we've crossed a line. The invisible red string that separates us from casually inappropriate to doing something that could land him in jail and me in therapy for a lifetime. Thanks. I groan. It feels so good. The stretch, his hands, everything. I'm going to hell.
Yep.
His thumbs touch the hem of my shorts as he draws circles on my skin. One time. Two times. On the third, I know it's not accidental. I know we're on the brink of something. I know this is not supposed to happen. He picks up my foot and stretches my hamstring, pinning my foot next to my head. When he leans into me, I feel his penis pressed against my groin through our clothes. It feels like it's pulsating. My mouth goes dry. So your wife lives with her mom now? I ask loudly. I don't know why. Maybe to distract him. Maybe to distract myself. Maybe to remind both of us that she exists.
Yeah, we're not on the best of terms. We're not really together.
He releases me from the hamstring stretch. The tips of his thumbs are touching the hem of my panties under my shorts now. He stills. I swallow hard. Close my eyes.
Amabel.
It's the first time he doesn't call me Penrose. I don't answer. I don't breathe. I hate that a part of me wants this. I hate that my panties are damp again.
I can make this really good for you, sweetie, but you can't tell anyone, okay?
My words are gone, shriveled inside my throat. I know I should say no. I want to say no, but somehow I hear myself saying yes. I want to please him.
I'll get into a lot of trouble if people find out, but I know you want to, and, well, I've been wanting to for a while.
A beat passes without either of us saying or doing anything. His thumbs on the sides of my panties feel weird, foreign, but also thrilling. Just when I think he is going to pull my shorts down and remove my panties and enter me, the way I saw in a porn movie once, he tugs both to the side. A cool breeze passes over my vagina, letting me know that it is completely exposed to him. I pop one eye open and watch him watching me, licking his lips.
Fuck,
he says. I'm a virgin. But what I'm really trying to say is that I want to keep it that way. I'm not like Percy. I don't want to wait until marriage before I lose my virginity, but I want it to mean something. Not to think back in a few years and remember I gave it to someone who was expecting a child with someone else.
Yeah. I know. I'll never hurt you, sweetie.
And then before I know it, he is crouched down, in front of his open truck, sucking my vagina into his mouth. I'm mortified. It feels so awkward. I want to push him away, but I also don't want to look like a crybaby, especially after how good he's been to me, how he always pays me extra attention, massages my legs, works on my knee. I squeeze my eyes shut and remind myself that no one is going to know. Not Percy, not my parents, not Ross and Sailor, my best friends. Definitely not the other Harriers. If a tree falls in the middle of the woods and no one hears it, did it actually happen? This will be our little secret, a thing I take with me to the grave.
Everything feels wet between my legs. I don't know if I like it or not. I mean, I like the attention, but I don't know. Not necessarily everything else. After what feels like forever, but is probably only 10 minutes, he stops, turns around from me, and I see his arms flexing through his hoodie. He is rubbing one out. He finishes. I don't see any of it, as his back is to me. He cleans himself off with baby wipes, then returns to the trunk. By then, I'm sitting down on the edge again, legs dangling from it like nothing happened. We're cool. Everything's fine. He is not really with his wife, and this is consensual. It's not like that news article at all. Besides, if it's so bad, why does it feel so good? Hey, he grins. Hi. Then he kisses me, tongue and all, and I taste the muskiness and earthiness of myself and his saliva, a mixture of things I've never tasted before. That's when I decide sin doesn't taste so bad.
Chapter 21. Devon. Seconds after Swevin slammed the door to a room with a loud bang, Louisa turned to me and said, I'm not stupid, you know. Never thought you were, I said easily, taking a sip of my wine. You still haven't touched me, not even a kiss. It had been 6 dates. They were good dates, too, although I was careful to be respectable Devon around her. We did not discuss weird animals, and she did not tease me about my age or my language or my accent, and, come to think about it, my existence. I pride myself on my good behavior, I said idly. You're the biggest sinner of them all, and we both know that. She offered me an impatient smile. If you wanted me, you would have taken me by now. I leaned back in my seat, scanning her face pensively. Louisa was on the cusp of looking her age. Her skin had become thinner, clinging to her bones delicately, giving her an elegant, slightly malnourished look. She was a far cry from the plump-cheeked Swevin, with the dusting of freckles and flushed, healthy skin. Louisa's beauty had history and wrinkles and stories. She was lovely in a way that was far more interesting than a bombshell who looked photoshopped within an inch of her life. I fancy you, I admitted to Louisa.
Not enough to make a move, apparently, she said easily.
Everything was easy with her, and therein lied the temptation of yielding to my mother's request. Then why are you here? I asked.
I still have hope. Is it foolish?
She twisted the wine glass here and there on the table, holding it by the stem. Foolish? No. Unlikely. Always.
I reckon I might be able to break you.
Louisa mused, sipping her red wine. Candlelight danced across the planes of her face, making her smile appear softer.
If I told you a year ago that we'd be sitting together discussing a potential affair, you wouldn't have believed me.
No, I wouldn't, I admitted.
Yet here we are.
Here we are. I stole another glance at Swevin's door. This time, she didn't eavesdrop or peek. At the end of that week was a gala. The 78th annual Boston Ball, a fundraiser for the Gerald Fitzpatrick Foundation, a 501c3 tax-exempt non-profit organization that symbolized to many the official arrival of spring. Proceeds of the ball, which usually sat at around $3 million, went to various local establishments I didn't care for nor wanted to know about. But it was an excellent write-off for my firm, not to mention a terrific excuse to wear my Ermenegildo Zegna suit. Attending the Boston Ball was also a business move. I'd be hard-pressed to find a better place which gathered all of Boston's private island owners' club, most of which were existing or potential clients. As I stood there at the O'Donnell Ballroom scanning the place, I couldn't help but feel a tinge of pride. I'd become the polar opposite of my father. The hard-working, law-respecting man who did not let himself be swayed by women or booze. The O'Donnell Ballroom was a 5,000-square-foot venue on Boylston Street, with grand windows, elegant Tudor architectural details, black wooden beams, ecru chandeliers, and champagne silk draperies. Waiters floated across the room, bypassing women in ball gowns and men in dashing suits. I stood in a cluster of people, including Killian, Hunter, Sam, and Sam's stepfather, Troy, while keeping an eye out for Emmabel. I knew she was going to be here. Her sister helped organize the event, and Swevin celebrated every one of her sister's mundane accomplishments. Said him starting a private bank is as laughable an idea as my starting a Christian crusade to save hairy frogs. I'd never buy into his ventures, I heard Killian explain to Troy. If Killian was here, his wife was nearby, and if Persephone was on the premises, Belle couldn't be more than a few feet away. I only put 2 mil into it, Hunter cried out defensively, so I could be on the board and gain some experience. If it bombs, it bombs. It's no skin off my back. Devin, what do you think about James Davidson's new bank? Sam pulled me into the conversation, the devious smirk on his face telling me he knew I didn't listen to a word they said. I tapped my index finger over the glass of champagne I held. I tried to think what I thought. I'd been more focused on trying to find my roommate than the conversation. I think Davidson is rubbish at everything he does, and I said so to Hunter when he came to me with the proposition. Luckily, Hunter needs his money like I need another hormonal female to handle, so as he said, no worries. How is Emmabel doing anyway? Hunter asked. Is she starting to show? I thought she was. Last time I saw her, a couple of days ago. When she passed me in the kitchen, I thought I caught a glimpse of a rounded stomach. I couldn't tell for sure, but since I kept my cards close to my chest when it came to my personal life, they had no idea I was not on speaking terms with her. Moderately. Are you taking advantage of the pregnancy cravings? Sam elevated an eyebrow. I raised my champagne in the air in salute. Same answer. Well, Killian took pleasure in directing his pinky beyond my shoulder, pointing at something. Then you may want to ensure you're the only one enjoying those cravings, because Davidson seems to be working on his next private venture. I followed his line of vision, turning around to see Emmabel standing in the corner of the room, wearing a light blue silk Cinderella gown, her sandy hair in an elegant do. She was laughing at something James Davidson was saying, her fingers fluttering over her necklace. The same Davidson who wouldn't know a rotten deal from a good one if it chopped off his leg without anesthesia. He was objectively handsome in a white-bread sort of way, with brown, thick hair, big white teeth, and the languid, lazy manners of a man who never had to work for what he owned. And he was completely enchanted with the lurid, shockingly vivid woman in front of him. I squinted, focusing on her midriff. To my disappointment, her dress hid her belly quite well. It didn't even matter. If Belle wanted to sleep with Davidson tonight, nothing was going to stop her. Isn't James Davidson married? I was surprised to hear my question sound more like a moan. Newly divorced, Hunter corrected, off to my right. He bumped his shoulder against mine as we both looked on at Belle, laughing throatily at something Davidson said. What could have possibly made her laugh? The guy was drier than a rice cake. His ex just bought a new Cadillac and a pair of tits to taunt him, but I hear he's moving on to nicer and better pastures. That pasture isn't going to be Emmabel, Killian tisked. Doubt she got that memo. She's just being polite, I lamented. Yes, your baby mama is known for her manners, Sam chuckled. Also, polite people don't touch other people's chests, Hunter laughed. Buggers. She was touching his chest. I wasn't a violent man, but I was quite sure I was well on the way to doing something that would land me in state prison. What do you think? I asked Sam. Across the room, Emmabel shook her head when a server approached her with a tray of champagne, while James leaned closer to her, whispering something in her ear. I think if I were in your shoes, James would have had 6 teeth missing and a punctured lung by now, Sam said indolently. That was all the assurance I needed that I wasn't overreacting, even though I was overreacting because I was currently dating another woman, even if technically I did not touch her. I moved quickly, brushing shoulders, crossing the vast room, my fingers pressing hard against the thin champagne glass. I wanted to kill James and lock Emmabel in an ivory tower. Though really, could I blame her? She thought I was about to get engaged to someone else in a few short weeks, maybe even days. What kind of claim did I have over this woman? None at all. I stopped in front of them, smiling like all was well in the world. Well, darling, I've been looking for you. I made a show of kissing her cheeks, but ignored it when James reached for a handshake. Politeness went out the window when his eyes landed on what was mine. You were? Swevin gave me a lazy once-over. Again, I found her indifference to me enchanting. Honestly, one would think you'd be searching for more important things, like your spine. Maybe I'll find your manners while I'm at it, I bit out. Oh, I don't know about that. You don't have a good track record for finding things, my G-spot can attest. That was plainly a lie. I could find a G-spot if it was in a lineup with five fucking others, and she darn well knew it. Devon, do you know this gem? James pointed at her with his glass of bubbly like she was a painting he was thinking of buying. I wanted to punch him to the ground and then keep going until he reached the depths of hell. She is so funny. Marvelous, I said gravely. And yes, I know her well.
Not well enough, apparently.
Belle took out her phone from her purse, determined to let me know she was more disinterested than embarrassed about the scene I was making. Well, enough to impregnate her with my baby. I turned to James, nailing him with a frosty look. You make whatever you want of it. You're pregnant? James's eyes dropped to a midriff. His skin went pale. His eyes flared. Perhaps he thought he hit the jackpot with wife number two. Belle shrugged, rolling the entire thing off her back.
We both want a child. It's not like we're together.
We do live together. I let loose a wolfish grin. She patted my arm like a concerned aunt.
Only because you begged.
Begged? No, but I did use an unorthodox way of persuasion.
You talk a real big game, honey. You do know people have sex all the time and it doesn't end with marriage or babies or even, you know, a phone call?
Try to reduce what we have as much as you wish, but the facts speak for themselves. You are carrying my child, living under my roof, and getting nailed by me on a weekly basis. This was the part where James Davidson excused himself and pretended he noticed someone across the room. I stayed with Swevin, who stared at me like she was going to have my balls for breakfast tomorrow.
What the fuck, dude?
The fuck is you're flirting with one of the worst charlatans in the business in front of my eyes, and I cannot risk his subpar intelligence and awful backward logic near my child. What if he becomes her stepdad? I was well aware I sounded like a terrible hypocrite. Belle's blue eyes widened more in anger than shock.
Are you kidding me now?
Not now, but maybe later. There's not much humor in our situation.
You're marrying someone else.
She punched me in the chest, hard. We were beginning to draw the wrong sort of attention. Unfortunately for Belle, she had finally met her match. I did not much care what people thought of me. Most were so dazzled by my titles and accent, they'd let me get away with murder. I'd still let you warm my bed, if you play your cards right. I knew this was going to drive her bonkers. It did. She slapped my face now. Hard. I did not react.
Take me somewhere private so I can bite your head off properly,
she commanded. I pressed my hand against the small of her back and ushered her to a mezzanine library in the corner of the room. It was a small space, painted wall to wall with an elaborate black sky dotted with stars that made you feel like you were in outer space. A cluster of businessmen lounged there, talking idly as they sipped their drinks. Out, I barked. They scurried away like the hares had when my father had unleashed his hound dogs. People in the city knew I made a good friend and a terrible enemy. I pinned Swevin to one of the walls, my eyes dropping to her luscious lips. She had nowhere to move, nowhere to go. Here, I hissed seductively to her lips. Bite my head off. I'll even unbuckle to make life easy for you. She groaned, pushing me away.
You're about to marry someone else, so get the hell away from me before I grab your balls and make sure the child I'm carrying is the only one you'll have.
I chuckled sardonically, palming her cheek. She slapped my hand away. You're frightened, aren't you? That I'd put a ring on her finger. I was flattered, though I still couldn't understand why she was so darn stubborn and cold.
Actually, I couldn't care less. I'm just letting you know I'm no one's side piece.
She made a move to duck under my arm, but I moved quickly, blocking her way to the door. Who fucked you up like this? I seethed, demanding to know. I held her arms, not wanting to let go, but unsure how to get to her either. I'm trying my fucking hardest, but always reach the same dead end. You want the cock, the banter, the conversation, but not the feelings. When I give the feelings to someone else, you lose it. So let me ask you again, who did this to you? I shook with rage. I was going to kill the wanker, end him. Who made you so utterly incapable of having a healthy relationship with a man? None of your business. She spat in my face. I didn't even bother wiping the saliva off. She tried escaping again. I blocked her. Again. Not so fast. Tell me what I need to do to get through to you. I was completely out of my depth. We were both fighting for control over a situation neither of us had power in. She tilted her chin up, a sly grin gracing her Aphrodite features. There's nothing you can do or say to make me see you as more than what you are. A spoiled little rich boy who ran away from home, but never really escaped the golden cage. You finally found the one thing you cannot have, me, and if it kills you, well, then die. I slammed my palms against the wall, boxing her between them. I was so frustrated I was on the verge of destroying the room, ripping it apart. And where the fuck did my champagne glass go anyway? You're impossible, I roared. You're an asshole. She yawned right into my face. I regret the day I offered you this arrangement. At least before this, I had a bit of respect and sympathy toward you. I don't need either from you. Emmabel pushed me away, her tone businesslike. You think you're so much better than your family, don't you? Just because you work for a living doesn't make you a martyr. Don't wait up for me at home. I'll be sleeping at Purr's tonight. Why on bloody earth would you do that? So you can have a little room to finally nail your precious new girlfriend, she boomed. Emmabel gave me the finger as she dashed outside, the hem of her dress flipping about her delicate ankles. I chased her. Of course I chased her. At this point, I was unable of making one rational decision when it came to this woman. But I was no longer enamored by her ability to throw me off balance. Now all I felt was disgust and disappointment toward both of us. I was too old for this shite. Emmabel stopped momentarily, turned around, opened her mouth again. You've been enjoying your precious Louisa like you don't share a roof with the future mother of your child. Well, if you're happy to screw around, I'm going to find myself some entertainment too, and there's nothing you can do about it. Come close to me again tonight, and I'll break your nose. With another whoosh of her skirts, she was off. I stopped. For the first bloody time, I came to the conclusion that chasing Emmabel Penrose may not be the right, or constructive, or fun thing for me to do. It was just me and the vast, dark room. I regulated my breaths and looked around. Life was a lonely business, even if you were never completely alone. This was why people fell into love. Love, it seemed, was a brilliant distraction from the fact that everything was temporary and nothing quite mattered like we thought it did. It was only after I stood there for an entire minute when I realized something puzzling. I was inside a small, closed, confined room, all by myself, and I didn't have a panic attack. Love has some strange ways indeed, I thought, sauntering out of the room leisurely, plucking another glass of champagne from a tray. Better to not find out what they are. Chapter 22. Devon. Swevin successfully avoided me the rest of the evening. She fluttered between clusters of people like a butterfly, all husky laughter and white, pointy teeth. I did my own rounds among clients and associates, pretending I wasn't half dead on the inside. Time seemed to melt like a Salvador Dali painting, and each tick of the watch on my wrist brought me an inch closer to turning around and walking away. From my commitments, responsibilities, from everything I had built and used as a wall against what was waiting for me in England. At some point during the evening, Persephone slipped her arm through mine and tugged me from a particularly mind-numbing discussion about suspenders. "Hey there, bud." Her lavender gown hovered along the marble floor. She was delicate as an eggshell, pale as the midnight moon, sweet and placid, a far cry from her fire engine older sister. I could see why she suited Killian, who was cold and callous everywhere. She brought his temperature up, while he cooled down her warmth. Yin and yang. But Belle and I weren't complementary to one another. She was fire and I was concrete. We did not mix well. I was sturdy and even and stable, while she thrived in chaos. "How are the kids?" I asked Persephone blandly, already bored with the conversation. What I do to talk to Swevin about peculiar animals just about now. "They're very well, but I doubt that's what you want to talk about." She gave me a lopsided grin and dragged me to the center of a human circle, consisting of Ashling, Sailor, and herself. I complied, mainly because between getting my head bitten off by a pack of women and talking about suspenders, I'd die at the hands of the women any day of the bloody week. I looked between all three of them. "Looks like I'm the victim of some sort of intervention," I drawled, cocking an eyebrow. "Sharp as always, Mr. Whitehall," Sailor said, swinging back whiskey like it was water. Definitely her father's daughter. She was the only woman at the ball to wear a suit. She pulled it off fantastically. "We want to talk to you about something." That something was Louisa, I was certain. I folded my arms over my chest, waiting for more. "We wanted to know what you're going to do to ensure Belle is safe and sound. After all, we betrayed her confidence by telling you about that man in Boston Common. Now we want to know that our decision was justified." Ashling pinned me with a look. They wanted to talk about that. Belle lives with me now, and I put Simon in charge of her. I'm monitoring her as best I can without putting an ankle GPS scram on her. "Is an ankle monitor totally out of the question?" Sailor asked with the utmost sincerity. "Yes, unless I want to lose a limb or two," I deadpanned. "I'm sure Simon's great, but he's only with her when she's at the club. I still think you should ask for Sam's help," Ashling insisted. When I broached the subject of Sam with Belle, she said she had it under control and didn't want his interference. I pointed out smartly. Going against her wishes would mean an early grave for me. "How did you feel when Killian sent Sam's men after you?" I swiveled to Persephone, who turned salmon pink, her gaze shifting to her feet. "Not good," she admitted, "but I got over it, eventually." "Luckily for your bastard husband, you're as agreeable as a peach. Your sister, however, I think we can all agree, is more of an underripe grapefruit." Ashling frowned. "Belle is hot-headed, but sometimes you have to do things for a person, even when they don't think they need it." Spoken like a true tyrant, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Swevin was unattainable, unreachable, and unreasonable, and I had to keep her alive. Yay fucking me. "If only we had an idea who it could be," Sailor tapped her temple, thinking. "She thinks it's that arsehole she fired a while back," I offered. "Frank?" Persephone scrunched her nose. I shrugged, even though I remembered his name. Of course I did. Any man in my position would. "That makes sense. He's the only loose end I can think of," Sailor rubbed at her chin. There was a brief silence, which I decided to fill with a question of my own. "Has she told you anything about our situation?" "What situation?" Persephone asked alertly. "I hope you're treating her well." "Bitch, please," Sailor snorted. "If anyone is getting unfair treatment there, it's him." "She's been moody," I said vaguely. "Don't worry, it's not because you're marrying someone else." Sailor looked highly amused, tucking one hand into the front pockets of her cigar pants. So they did know about Louisa. Belle didn't hide it from them. She simply didn't care enough to expand on the matter. Do you honestly believe she'd be fine with me marrying someone else? I sounded like a teeny bopper asking her BFF whether she had a chance with Justin Bieber or not. Whenever I intended to look for my spine and Belle's manners, I should take a moment to find my masculinity, too. She'd be fine if you marry five women, simultaneously, Sayla said firmly. Belle doesn't do relationships, or morals, for that matter. She's never been in love, Persephone said with a longing sigh. Never wanted to settle down with anyone. People change, I said half-heartedly. Not this person, Aisling uttered aloud my gravest suspicion. If you're waiting for her to profess her love to you and you're holding off on a wedding because of it, don't. Aisling put a hand on my shoulder, offering me an apologetic smile. Belle Penrose only has enough love for herself, her baby, and her family.
Chapter 23. Belle. 14 years old. Winter comes and goes. There's a bit of a buzz around me. I win a few local competitions and even have a small article written about me in the local paper for breaking the county record, which Dad hangs on our fridge because apparently being embarrassing is his main side hustle. In March, Coach Locken's wife, Brenda, gives birth to a healthy baby boy. By then, we're doing the whole woods routine twice a week. He eats me out, then we kiss, then he jerks off before giving me a ride to school. One time on his birthday, he convinced me to lick the sticky white juice from his fingers like they were lollipops. He took three pictures. I cried all night after he'd taken them. I still think about the fact they're somewhere on his phone, and I want to throw up every time I remember it. When we do it at his office, rarely, I take note that the photo of Brenda, which has been there before, is missing from his desk. He also takes off his wedding ring, but only when we practice alone in the woods. Coach tells me that they split a few months ago. Brenda didn't want him to touch her anymore after getting pregnant and said mean things about his job, like how he doesn't make enough money and stuff. Coach says he wishes I were his girlfriend, that he could take me out to the movies or to a nice restaurant or just to hang out. Honestly, I'm starting to think maybe this Brenda chick doesn't deserve Steve. I'm not allowed to call him that when we're not alone. Anyway, it makes me feel a lot less bad about our affair. But then Brenda gives birth, and everything changes. Coach misses 3 days in a row. The third day, he is MIA. In the cafeteria, two lunch duty teachers gush about how Brenda gave birth at a local hospital, which, why would she if she went back to living with her mama all the way down in New Jersey? Did you see the baby? So sweet. He looks exactly like his daddy. Miss Worski coos, stabbing her yogurt with a plastic spoon. Yeah, Steve sent the pictures to everyone in the group, remember? And get this, he got his wife the best push present. A brand new car. A Kia Rio, right? Yes, I'm looking into buying one too. His wife? Push present? I thought they weren't together anymore, on the brink of divorce. I spend the rest of the day in a haze, forcing myself not to text him. Ross sneaks out and buys me a bottle of Gatorade. He doesn't ask why I'm upset, why my eyes are red and my face is ashen. More than heartbroken, though, I feel great shame. I've been made a fool by this man, whom I put my trust in. Something breaks in me that day. Something I don't know if I can ever fix.
Chapter 24. Devon. Belle made good on her promise not to return home that night, which made me, in turn, call Louisa on my way to work the next morning. Lou was staying at the Four Seasons, spending her days shopping and hoping I would get my head out of my arse. The good news for her was that my head was inching away from said arse, little by little. Louisa answered on the first ring, sounding breathless.
Hello, Devon?
Is this a bad time? I rounded a street corner in my Bentley, looking for parking on the street. Underground parking seemed like a ridiculous idea. People had no business going under the ground when they were still alive.
Absolutely not. It's a perfect time.
I heard the soft thud of a towel being dropped and the whine of a door opening as a fitness trainer in the background instructed, "Now back to downward dog position."
Hi. Hey. Hello.
Louisa laughed a little at her own awkwardness. I slipped into a parking space on the street and reversed.
Is everything all right?
She asked. It was about to be. It was time to choose a person who chose me. I was wondering if you'd like to have dinner tonight.
Sure. Should I book reservations for us?
Louisa asked sweetly.
There's an amazing Italian restaurant on Salem Street that I've been wanting to try, although I'm happy to cater to any of your diet restrictions.
My father's words haunted me. Love marriages are for the great unwashed masses, people born to follow society's thankless rules. You shall not desire your wife, Devon. Her purpose is to serve you, sire children, and look lovely. There was a point to be made. The Whitehall family had existed for so many years, had so many traditions. Who was he to dictate the end of that line? I would not allow the man to rob me out of my rightful inheritance. No, I exited the car and galloped toward the front door of my office. I was thinking we could dine in your hotel room. I have a few matters to discuss with you.
Is everything okay?
She asked, worried. Yes, I took the stairs up to my office. Everything's perfect. I just had an epiphany of sorts.
I like epiphanies.
You're going to love this one.
Devon?
She hesitated. I pushed the glass door to my office open. Joanne was already waiting with printouts of my daily agenda and a fresh cup of coffee. I plucked them from her hand. Yes, Lou?
You haven't called me Lou in a long time. Not for decades.
Another pause.
Should I wear my finest silks?
I could practically hear Louisa biting down on her lower lip. I took a sip of my coffee, smiling grimly. Better yet, darling, don't wear anything under your dress at all. My mother called me several times that day, skirting around the subject of Louisa without actually talking about her. She asked about Emmabel, if we still lived together. When I said we were, she sounded considerably less cheery. If Louisa and I are to have a future, the baby and Emmabel would be a big part of my life, I said curtly.
But you wouldn't move back to England, Mum responded. She'd chain you to Boston forever.
I love Boston. I truly did. It's my home now. Whitehall Court Castle had never been more than walls full of bad memories. During my lunch break, I went and picked a 1.5-carat cushion-cut engagement ring from Tiffany & Co. When I got back to the office, I instructed Joanne to purchase a large bouquet of flowers and spare no expense on the task.
You finally gonna woo that Penrose girl, my lord, sir?
Joanne couldn't help but blurt out from behind her computer screen, munching on a celery stick that signified her fifth attempt at Weight Watchers that month.
It's high time. A child should have a stable home, you know. A mother and a father. That's how it was done when I was growing up, Your Highness.
Joanne insisted on referring to me royally, even though she had no idea what to call me. She also thought the flowers were for Emmabel. Why shouldn't she? She had booked Swevin's weekly OBGYN appointments and sent cabs with me in them to pick up Belle. It's not the Penrose girl, I said shortly, blazing into my office. Joanne darted up and followed me, her short legs moving with force I hadn't seen from her since she had to take half a day off when her daughter went into labor.
What do you mean it's not the Penrose girl?
She demanded. I settled behind my desk, powering up my laptop. Not that it's any of your business, but I'm courting another woman.
Courting another? Devon, is that how you folks do it in England? Because here, bigamy is illegal.
Devon? Whatever happened to His Royal Highness Lord Sir? Belle and I aren't married. I waved her away.
Only because you haven't asked,
she boomed. She is uninterested. It was easier to admit this to a 60-year-old woman with 5 kids and 7 grandchildren who thought Ferrero Rocher was the height of sophistication than to do so in the ears of my mates and their wives. Make her interested, I chuckled darkly. I tried, trust me, in my own way, at least.
If she wasn't interested, she wouldn't have let you put a baby in her, honey. Of course she's interested. You just need to give her a little push. If you go out with someone else, you're going to kill any chance you have with the girl, even if the relationship falls apart. And it will fall apart.
Louisa is an absolute gem, lovely, well-kept, and extremely stylish.
Those are good traits for a couch, my lord, not a woman.
In a wife, too. I was being purposefully difficult. For some reason, I deeply wanted to catch shite for what I was about to do, and knew Joanne would give it to me straight. Heaven knows I deserved being yelled at. 2 splotches of red colored her cheeks, and she reared her head back as if I'd physically struck her.
Wait a minute. Joe held up a hand. Did you just say wife?
Yes.
But you love Emmabelle.
God, you Americans do love to throw this word around a lot. I took out a rolly from a tin and tucked it into my mouth. I, at the very most, want her companionship, but she is unavailable to me. I need to move on.
If you marry someone else, Your Highness, I'm afraid I'll have to quit.
On what grounds?
Well, that you're a turd and a half.
Hearing Joanne use blasphemy to describe me, or anyone else in the universe for that matter, cemented the fact that I was indeed a flaming piece of shite. I couldn't help but laugh. Get those flowers ready and go back to work, Joanne. And if you want to quit, leave a resignation letter on my desk. She turned around and stomped away, muttering under her breath. For the rest of the day, she did not try to engage me in small talk whenever I left my office, nor attack me with new pictures of her grandchildren, nor give me a snack she'd packed especially for me from home, usually in the form of a healthy peanut butter and granola cookie. At 6 o'clock, when I exited my office, a large bouquet of white roses, peonies, and ranunculus waited on her desk with a note. Mr. Whitehall, you're about to lose everything for nothing. Congratulations. P.S. Consider this my official resignation letter. I quit. J. Throwing the note in the bin, I grabbed the flowers and headed downstairs. My phone began ringing in my front pocket with an incoming call. Mum, it was outrageously late in England, or extremely early, depending how you looked at it. I picked it up on a whim, knowing that I shouldn't. What now? I growled.
Devi!
She cried in delight.
Sorry, I won't take a lot of your time. I would love to throw an engagement party for you. The spring is a lovely time for celebration. Is there any way you could take a weekend off and hop on a plane with Lou?
It didn't sit well with me. The fact that Ursula naturally assumed Louisa and I were already engaged. Additionally, the thought of being in a closed space with the Bouchard brothers and a few dozen more stuck-up royals made me want to seek asylum on another planet. Work is hectic right now.
You only get married once, she argued.
Not necessarily in the 21st century.
I hope it's not about that dreadful woman again. If she gets into trouble, it's on her, not on you.
That dreadful woman had a name, and frankly, my mother didn't deserve to utter it out loud. But something struck me. No, don't go there. There is simply no way. Why would she get into trouble? I asked, throwing open the driver's door to my Bentley before slipping inside. I put the phone on speaker and tossed it to the central console. What do you know? What if she was the one who was harassing Swevin? She had all the discriminatory characteristics, a motive, a grudge, and an end game. She knew where I lived, which meant that she knew where Belle lived. And whatever information she was missing could be filled in by a private investigator. But was she really capable of such a thing?
I know nothing, my mother gasped, trying to sound offended. I just said it because you told me she was a stripper. They tend to get into hot water. Your life choices say a lot about you. Why, what are you insinuating?
What are you hiding? I countered.
I'm not hiding anything, but I know you and you are a caregiver by nature. I don't want you to give up on things because of her.
I'm starting to think you know more than you let on. This made her blow out a sharp breath.
You're becoming extremely paranoid. I'm worried about you. You're losing it. Coming back home would do you good. Please think about it.
Dinner was, as expected, perfect. The setting, the room, the meal, and the woman, all 5 stars. Louisa sat across from me in the grand suite she was housed in, clad in a black evening dress, flawless for the occasion. We dined on roasted lobster with red potatoes. The French doors of her balcony were open, the spring breeze wafting inside, carrying with it the scent of blossom. It reminded me of Europe, of lazy summer breaks on the shore in the south of France, of unprocessed meats and cheese so smelly it would make our eyes water, and bronzed skin and chateaus I'd get lost in. And I realized I missed home, to a point where it started to hurt.
You know, I tried to move on from you. I even succeeded for a little while,
Louisa admitted, running the pad of her finger over the rim of her wine glass.
Frederick was an incredible man. He taught me how to believe, a power I didn't think I had anymore. I used to walk around with this god-awful sense of failure. After all, my entire purpose in this life was to marry you, and I'd managed to somehow scare you away.
Lou, I groaned, feeling terrible because, in a sense, she was still doing just that, trying to win me.
No, wait, I want to finish.
She shook her head.
When I met him, he spent an entire year just peeling away my insecurities, layer after layer, to try and find out who I was. It was hard, and it was a long process. He had no idea what made me the way I was, why my wounds had refused to close. But he was patient and sweet.
I fractured the lobster with the cracker, feeling kinship to the dead animal. And for Frederick, who sounded like a good man, who deserved better. And also a weird sense of revelation. Frederick had the ability and endurance to stick around for Lou when she was impenetrable to him. Why couldn't I do so with Emmabel?
At first, when I was with him, I had dreams about you coming back and me flaunting my new relationship, my perfect man. But after a while, I stopped thinking about you. He was enough. Actually,
she hesitated.
He wasn't just enough. He was everything, and it hurt so bad to lose him. At that point, I realized I might be cursed.
Louisa smiled, propping her chin on her knuckles. I looked into her eyes and saw sorrow. So much sorrow. Here we were, about to become engaged, to be married, and we were still pining for other people. The only difference was the person I wanted was still alive, and Louisa saw me as a replacement, a consolation prize. You're not the only one who'd been scarred by this experience, sweets. I felt terrible about what I did to you, how I left you high and dry. I vowed to never marry anyone else. Clearly, I kept that promise, I said, pushing the lobster away. I'd lost my appetite. I never had a serious girlfriend. My relationships, like my milk, had an expiration date of less than 1 month. I figured if I ruined things for you, it was only fair I'd do the same for me. She reached across the round table, taking my hands in hers.
We have a chance now, Devi. Let's make up for lost time. It is not too late. Nothing's stopping us.
One thing was, I'm about to become a father.
We can do this together. You said you'll have joint custody, right? I can move here. Ursula would prefer it if you moved back, but I'm sure we'll still get her blessing. I can help you raise the child. We can have children of our own. I bear no hostility toward Emmabel. I simply don't think she's a good fit for you. I'll be who you need me to be, Devi. You know that.
She was saying all the right things, making all the right points. You'll need to be good to that child, I warned, my tone turning icy. I wanted the baby as much as Emmabel. We had a pact.
I'll treat this child as if it were my own.
Louisa brought my hand to her mouth, leaning her cheek against my palm.
I promise. You know I never break my promise.
I didn't remember standing up, but at some point I did. Louisa was up on her feet too, her body flushed with mine, her mouth moving over my own. My hands skimmed the length of her back. We were kissing. Belle didn't want me. My family was on the verge of bankruptcy, and really, would it be so awful to have someone to grow old with? Someone who had my back? But at the end of the day, I didn't enjoy it. Not the kisses, not the way her body folded around mine possessively. I was completely soft. My cock refusing to find a logical reason for this union with Louisa appealing. The softer I was, the more Louisa tried to coax me into arousal, kissing me harder, deeper, raw, cupping my cock through my slacks and squeezing teasingly, flipping her head back and forth. Bile hit the back of my throat. Not good. I took a step back in order to stop it, to buy time, maybe produce the engagement ring I'd come here with, put it on her finger, but I couldn't, for the fucking life of me, take the ring out of my pocket. Make the final move. Ask her the question I couldn't take back. I don't want perfect with Louisa. I want a big hot mess with Belle. Meanwhile, Louisa perceived my step back as an invitation to get undressed. She slipped out of her black frock to reveal shapely legs and a well-kept body that screamed 5 Pilates sessions a week. Her dark eyes traveled to my groin, her brow furrowing when she realized there was still no detectable bulge.
Buggers? Well, what's a little hurdle?
Do not say a little. She giggled, moving toward me again, resuming our kisses. Swallowing back the sour taste of vomit, I tried to concentrate on the task at hand. She was a beautiful woman, no less pretty than the women I usually took to bed.
Maybe I can.
Louisa slipped a hand inside my briefs through my clothes and rubbed, her fingers cold and bony. The distant sound of my father's taunting laughter echoed in my ears.
Is that okay?
Great, I hissed, softer than a bloody Pillsbury roll. Fantastic. But I felt nothing other than great frustration as her lips moved desperately against mine. She was doing such a thorough job rubbing my cock, I was surprised a genie didn't materialize from behind my zipper. Wait, I groaned into her mouth. I pushed her away gently. She latched against me harder.
I'll suck your cock,
she offered. Louisa dropped down to her knees, completely naked now, fumbling with the first button of my slacks. I stepped aside, worried the engagement ring was going to slip from my pocket. Don't, darling. I caressed her face while simultaneously moving it away from my crotch. It occurred to me, rather miserably, that I couldn't have sex with Louisa, no matter how much I wanted to. And I did. I wanted to get over Emmabelle, to move on, but it wasn't happening.
Is your stomach a bit dodgy? Must be the lobster.
She hurried to stand up, rushing to the bathroom and coming back in a creme satin robe.
Seafood can be suspect if you don't know the place.
This was the Four Seasons, not a shack on a remote island. I gave her a doubtful smile. I better head home. And I'm taking my soft pig in a blanket with me.
Oh.
Her face fell. Lou, I said gently.
It's just that she'll be there.
Comes with the territory of her living there.
Is it something I said?
She asked. I thought about what she said about Frederick, about the sort of man he was, and couldn't deny her the truth. Yes. When you told me about Frederick, I realized I could never offer you what he made you take for granted. I need to sort through things in my head. I slipped my hand over her waist and pulled her into me, kissing her lips. Take care now, Lou.
You too, Devi.
My head was still spinning when I got back home, my limbs heavy with the realization that I was apparently immune to all women in the world other than the one who didn't want me. I stomped my way upstairs, cursing myself for the millionth time that week that I couldn't use the lift like a logical human being. Once I was done detesting myself for my claustrophobia, I began despising myself for having a traitorous body. What on earth was wrong with it? In the past, I'd been able to get it up whenever the faint scent of a woman's perfume wafted through the air. Now, my cock decided it had principles, feelings, and morals. Did it not get the memo that it was, in fact, a cock? The least sophisticated organ in the human body, apart from the anus? I shoved past the entrance door to a darkened, vast living room, kicking the fencing equipment by the door aside. If Emma Bell was out again, working until late or being entertained by a male friend, I was going to do bloody nothing about it. I had no power over her. Hope that month of shagging her was worth it, mate, because this is your future. Moving across the living room, I passed by her bedroom before retiring to my own bed. Her door was ajar. To my great embarrassment, my entire body slackened with relief when I noticed the light inside was on. Unable to resist myself, I stopped by the sliver of space separating both of us and watched her. She was standing in front of an imperial full-length mirror. Her hoodie was bunched up around her chest. Her stomach was bare. She cradled it in front of her reflection, staring at it in wonder. My eyes trekked downward, doing the same. For the first time, it was truly and undeniably obvious that Emma Bell Penrose was pregnant. The hard, round shape of her belly could not be mistaken. It looked magnificent, so smooth and warm and full of a baby that belonged to us. She was showing. I closed my eyes, pressing my head against the wooden doorframe, drawing a breath. You're so fucking gorgeous, sometimes I want to devour you just to make sure no one else will have you. The words left my mouth before I could stop them. She turned around to the sound of my voice. The love and wonder in her expression melted, replaced by a sly smile. I'm surprised Louisa let you off the leash tonight. Trouble in purgatory? Guess it was her version of the word paradise for us. Stop it. I clipped. Stop what? She cooed. Stop acting like a brat. Stop pushing me away. Stop ruining a perfectly good moment because you're so scared of men you simply must torment them if they threaten to put a crack in your perfectly constructed wall. All right then. Belle let her hoodie drop over her stomach. No. I pushed myself off the doorframe and made my way to her, my stroll unhurried. I want to see. Emma Belle opened her mouth. Probably to tell me to go make a baby with Louisa if I was so interested in seeing a pregnant belly. But I managed to put a finger to her mouth before the words came out. It's my child, too. Silently, she pulled the hoodie up to her breasts. I stood in front of her, gazing at the wonder that was her pregnant stomach. Can I touch? My voice was unrecognizable to my own ears. Yeah. Hers, I noticed, shook, too. The air around us stood still, as if holding its breath, too. The tips of my fingers circled her stomach from both sides. It was hard as stone. We both looked down at her belly like we were waiting for something. A minute passed, then two, then five. I don't want to let go, I said. I don't want you to let go, she said quietly. We weren't talking about her stomach anymore. My eyes rode up to meet her gaze through our reflection in the mirror. Then why are you doing everything in your power to drive me away? She shrugged, a helpless smile on her face. That's the way I'm wired. It's bullshit. It's still true. Tell me what happened to you, I demanded for the millionth time. Thinking about Frederick, the way he had peeled Louisa's layers, was I even close to shedding the first coat? How many more to go? And what in the bloody hell happened to this woman? Even my mates, who were by no stretch of the imagination considered good guys, never left a woman quite so broken. She took a step forward, erasing all the space between us. I was hard as a rock and about to rip the clothes off of this woman.
Stop butting into my business, Devin. You've already sampled my bag of tricks. There's nothing more to see here.
You're more than a ditzy party girl, no matter how hard you try to market yourself this way. False advertising.
Huh,
she said dryly. You just haven't read the fine print? A mean smirk tugged at my lips. You're fantastic, and thorny, and worth everything you put me through.
No.
She pushed me, her palms slamming into my chest. She was angry now, scared. I pushed a button.
I'm not. Stop saying that. I'm the bad crop, the unwettable harlot.
You're fucking amazing, I drawled in her face, laughing lowly. Brilliant. One of a kind. The smartest woman I know. She pushed me again. I got harder.
I'm no good.
No, not good. Fucking terrific.
I'm going to be a terrible mother.
The last sentence was said in a rush of exasperation. She fell to her knees at my feet, her head hanging low.
Jesus, what was I thinking?